You're listening to HuntertonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located in the CenturyLink building at 14 Mine Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programming.
Not recognize their marriages, an issue that will be argued before the Supreme Court later this month. It takes time, and Wednesday is the filing deadline. It gets complicated because most state income tax returns use information from a taxpayer's federal return. States that don't recognize same-sex marriages are dealing with these issues in different ways, and of course, it's up to the taxpayer to figure out what to do. Sandy Kozel, Washington.
Jurors deciding whether to convict former New England Patriots player Aaron Hernandez of murder are back at work for a fifth day of deliberations. The 12 jurors spent nearly 20 hours last week deliberating. Hernandez is charged with the 2013 killing of Odin Lloyd, who is dating his fiancée's sister. Authorities in Maryland say two children taken into custody while walking home without an adult last year have been picked up again. Montgomery County Police say officers responded to a call to check on children without an adult at a Silver Spring Park yesterday and took the children to Child Protective Services. Meanwhile, the children's mother, Danielle Maytive, says she began searching for her 10-year-old son and 6-year-old daughter when they didn't return home on time. The case prompted the debate on so-called free-range parenting. For more news, go to usaheadlinenews.com. I'm Kelly Sloan, and you're listening to USA Headline News.
The news is sponsored by Patton, Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc.
Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they'll live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their own terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Pat and Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. They are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within your reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Pat and Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you achieve your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. That's 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Ameriprise Financial Services, Incorporated. Member FINRA and SIPC.
The weather this afternoon is going to be mostly sunny with a high near 71. South winds around 15 miles per hour. Tonight, there's a chance of showers after 1 a.m. Increasing clouds with a low around 50 and south winds 7 to 9 miles per hour. The chance of precipitation is 40%. Tuesday, showers likely before 2 p.m., cloudy, then gradually becoming mostly sunny with a high near 66 and north winds 3 to 8 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation is 60%, and Tuesday night will be mostly clear with a low around 42. Calm winds becoming north 5 to 8 miles an hour after midnight. Wednesday is sunny with a high near 65, north winds 8 to 10 miles an hour, and Wednesday night is partly cloudy with a low around 40. You're listening to Mental Health Matters. This is NAMI's hour, compliments of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. I'm Larry Cartwright, your host. And NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and there is a chapter of NAMI in every county in the state of New Jersey, every state in the union, and overseas. And what we try to do is we try to help people, individuals who may have mental health issues, or families who may have someone in their family or know someone who are close to, who have a mental health issue. We do this by teaching classes. In fact, my wife and I are in the middle of teaching one right now. It's a 12-week course, and we're going to be up to lesson 7, so I guess we're about halfway through. And it helps people understand more what the person with mental illness is going through, what to do, what not to do, maybe not what to say, etc., medications, side effects. We also have support groups where people can come and not be judged. because everybody in the support group has either gone through the same thing they're going through or are going through it at the same time. And it's a place they can vent and maybe get some different ideas from people who have gone on through it before them. Everything we do is free. There's no charge. We give presentations. And we do this radio show, which I hate to pat myself on the back, but not me. The show got an award from the Jersey Counselors Board of Mental Health Stigma this past summer, and we're very proud of that. Today, we're very privileged to have with us Gabriel Nathan. Gabriel, are you there?
I'm right here. How are you, Larry?
I'm very well. Thank you. Gabriel is a development specialist at the Montgomery County Emergency Services in Norristown, PA, and it is a private, nonprofit crisis response center. Did I say that right?
You did. Very,
okay.
Very good.
Okay. Would you take a moment, Gabriel, to explain exactly what your response center does, who it services, and that sort of thing?
Sure. You know, and before I do that, I really just want to say I'm privileged to be back on the show, and that pat on the back that you gave yourself is not self-congratulatory. It is very well deserved. I think that this show and any entity out there that strives to demystify mental illness for the public and educate and destigmatize really deserves a lot of credit. So I just wanted to throw that out there.
Well, thank you very much. Like I say, the show got it. I didn't. I just happened to be here behind the mic.
You know? Absolutely. Well, we all have our role to play.
Yeah, exactly.
So to tell you a little bit about Montgomery County Emergency Service, or MCES, as we call ourselves for short, we call ourselves a psychiatric response center, really, because we're multifaceted. I think when a lot of people think about us, they think about the 73-bed inpatient hospital, and that is our core of operations. And the hospital does provide crisis intervention, treatment, stabilization, support, and education through therapeutic groups and one-on-one interactions. But we're a lot more than just a hospital. We operate one of the nation's only hospital-based psychiatric ambulance squads, and staffed by specially trained EMTs that respond to crisis calls and frees up local police and EMS to attend to other emergencies. They assist law enforcement officers in carrying out involuntary commitment warrants in a more therapeutic way. We believe people should show up to the hospital for treatment in an ambulance, not a squad car, whenever possible. We also operate a 24/7, 365 crisis hotline, which is part of the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, and we receive approximately 4,500 calls a year. We also have a 24/7, 365 walk-in crisis center, which is staffed at all times by a psychiatrist, an outpatient clinic focused on the needs of people with developmental disabilities and those in the criminal justice system. We have an 8-bed crisis residential program. So this is housed in a 19th-century farmhouse on the grounds of Norristown State Hospital. And individuals who are experiencing a crisis but don't necessarily meet the criteria for inpatient hospitalization can come to our CRP and receive support and treatment in a very empathic, home-like setting. It's not restricted. It's not locked. People can come and go. It's a very, very lovely place.
And that's the crisis residential program?
Crisis residential.
Right. Okay.
Mm-hmm. We have a forensic blended case management service that engages individuals who are homeless or at risk of homelessness, who have mental illness and are justice involved, to help increase their community connections and help connect them to housing services. And finally, we have a crisis intervention specialist training, CIS for short. It's the nation's oldest crisis intervention training for law enforcement officers in the country. It helps police learn how to better intervene in a psychiatric emergency. Part of the program brings officers onto our inpatient unit where they can interact with patients and get a better feel for that part of treatment.
That's similar to crisis intervention training.
I'm sorry?
I said, is that similar to crisis intervention training?
It is similar. It is similar. There are some factors that are different. For instance, one of the main tenets of CIS is that we believe that every police officer in a police department should be a crisis intervention specialist. So
we do too, but unfortunately, a lot of the chiefs don't sort of go along. You know what I mean?
Now, logistics can be extremely difficult, but that's something that we really strive for here, and a lot of police departments and their chiefs, commanding officers, are on board. We recently just completed a national training for Amtrak's police department, where our crisis intervention specialist trainer went all across the country, Washington, Philadelphia, New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, and Oakland, training approximately 380 Amtrak police officers.
Yeah, I'd like to get back to that in a little bit, but I'm very interested in the psychiatric ambulance that you first initiated, spoke about. I know that here in Hunterdon County, I worked for a while at the medical center, and if we got a call on the crisis hotline and the person answering the phone felt that it was necessary to send someone out, we would send an outreach team out. And but they would come from the hospital, and they would be, you know, hospital employees per se. Now, from what I understand, this is similar, but you're not see. And if they had, well, as the team went out there, and after they did their assessment of the person and, you know, situation, if there was nothing else, and, you know, needed, they would give him information about, you know, behavioral health classes and, you know, such like that. Or if they felt that there was a need to transport the person, they would call an ambulance from the medical center, and then a police officer would come also, because every time an ambulance goes, a police officer comes.
Correct.
So consequently, that's how it works here. Now, I understand it's similar with this, but it's independently run, and it's not, help me, it's
sure,
not the same as, you know, what we have here.
Well, our psychiatric ambulance service is operated out of our hospital. So it is a part of MCES. It has its own, it's licensed by the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, staffed with certified emergency medical technicians.
Okay.
And in instances where an individual is determined to be in need of inpatient hospitalization, the inpatient commitment warrant is activated, and MCES Squad 305 can respond, in addition to law enforcement officers, to assist them in executing that warrant, that commitment warrant. MCS 305 can also transport individuals either to MCES for treatment or to a medical hospital for medical clearance prior to them coming to MCES. MCS Squad 305 also responds to medical emergencies at MCES, in our crisis area, and at our crisis residential program.
Okay. How did your acronym, MCES, how did you come up with, you know, this psychiatric, like private psychiatric ambulance?
Basically, it was a case of see a need, fill a need. You know, frequently, all too often, it's law enforcement, as you well know, the first coming into contact with individuals with mental illness, experiencing a psychiatric emergency, experiencing a crisis. And we looked at the situation in a different way and thought, well, how can we help the community response be more empathic? Can we help it be more treatment-oriented and potentially less stigmatizing? And so that's really how the psychiatric ambulance came about. And the psychiatric ambulance is almost as old as MCES is. MCES was founded in 1974, and the ambulance squad came about later that year or the next year at the latest. So that's how that came about, really looking for a way to help destigmatize that response in the community.
Was it hard to get the community to approve having a separate ambulance?
To be perfectly honest, I wasn't around at that point. I don't know what the challenge was or if there was a challenge out in the community, but I can tell you today, MCS Squad 305 is a very highly respected member of the community. Its work is respected by other EMS providers in the community, and our strongest ally is law enforcement. They greatly appreciate the services that we provide, and it's a very, very positive community relationship.
You know, it's funny because I have taken a CIT training. They wanted a family member along with, you know, all the police officers that were going. And it was quite interesting because in the beginning, it was every day for 8 hours a day, 5 days. And in the beginning, you could pick out the police officers who were there because they were told to be there, you know, and were not happy about being there. By the end of the class, the end of the 40 hours, it was like a complete turnaround, you know, for a lot of them. You know, obviously not all. A lot of them did know about it and were enthused about, you know, doing it and, you know, so on and so forth. But, the ones that you could pick out in the beginning, they just had a complete turnaround. And I thought that was pretty awesome, you know, because, you know, in the area, there's, you know, a lot that, you know, you got Patterson, you got Newark, you know, just like you have Philadelphia and, you know, other large cities where you're going to have a commingling of different people's races and creeds and what have you, and they're not all going to get along, you know. And to have officers who are trained and, you know, like Hunterdon County is a rural type area. And, you know, I tell people when we give classes and stuff like that and our support groups, when there's not a crisis, call your police department, your local police department, and tell them, if at all possible, and tell them your situation. Tell them what you're dealing with, you know, with your loved one and so on and so forth, so that when they get a call to your address, they know that it could be a mental health issue.
Yeah.
And to try to send a CIT-certified officer. And I'll tell you, it does work. You know, the used to be was, you know, take them, slam them down, put the cuffs on them, and, you know, haul them away.
Yep.
And now it's not that way anymore in most cases. In some cases it still is, but, you know, in a lot it isn't. And I find that very rewarding, you know.
Absolutely. And I think the more knowledge an officer has when they're rolling up to a scene, the better for everyone.
Right.
It's not just, you know, that the outcome is going to be better for the individual with mental illness. It's going to be so much better for the officer, for anybody around. So taking that time to inform law enforcement, this is the situation, this is my son or daughter, this is what they're experiencing, these are their triggers, this is what really helps them. You know, I think sometimes also law enforcement officers feel under pressure, you know, clear the call, get back out on the street,
right.
go to the next one. And more and more, a lot of law enforcement agencies are really de-emphasizing that and saying, take your time. You know, on a crisis call, time is the most valuable commodity that you have. There's no rush. It doesn't have to be resolved in seconds or minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Give the person space. Give the person time. And that can really set everyone at ease.
And it can, you know. Not only the individual who is in the crisis, but also the family and, you know, So I think it's awesome. I really do. When you were on the last time, and I still have notes from that time, so that's what I was looking at.
I don't have mine.
Well, see? You know, should have told me. I could have faxed you a copy.
Next time.
You had spoke about art reach.
Yes.
Okay. Is that still in effect?
It not only is it still in effect, but it's greatly expanded.
Okay.
The last time we talked.
Okay, so would you speak to that and also include how you feel about art and culture in mental health?
With pleasure. So ArtReach is a Philadelphia-based nonprofit that does a lot of different things around the area of arts accessibility. They have low-cost ticket options for underserved populations and a variety of programs, but what they do for us, which is really wonderful, they have an in-facility program where they have a roster of performers who offer their services to come to inpatient facilities where people don't have mobility or access to the arts and come in and entertain and enrich. So we first started a partnership with ArtReach in really the end of 2013, and Yeah, unfortunately, there is a fee for, and not unfortunately, there's a fee for the performers, as there should be, because they're very, very talented individuals. And we were supporting a concert every now and then, whenever we could, really. And the money to pay for the concerts was coming out of our patient fund. So basically, as part of my duties as development specialist here, I started trying to think of a way, you know, we really need to continue these concerts and expand them. So I started applying for grants. Fortunately, two grants came through. One was from the E. Rhodes and Leona B. Carpenter Foundation, and the other was from the Klayman Family Foundation. Now, the Carpenter Foundation said you can have a grant, but it has to be used for ArtReach performers only, so only performers coming from that organization, which is wonderful. And we have had several performers coming in from ArtReach. We had a visual artist do a poetry workshop. Her name is Averill Smith Barone. We had that at our Crisis Residential Program. We had Philadelphia percussionist Doc Gibbs, who has performed with Erykah Badu and Wyclef Jean and many different performers, Grover Washington. Doc Gibbs came and performed at the hospital as part of ArtReach. We just had a Brazilian duo called Minas come from ArtReach perform at the hospital. But the Klayman Family Foundation grant let us choose artists from anywhere. So that's when I really went wild and started contacting everyone I know and people that I don't know to come and perform at the hospital. So we had a Grammy-nominated flutist, Susanna Lowy. We had 44 members of a concert band, the Marion Concert Band, performing a Twilight concert in our outdoor courtyard. We had comic singer-songwriter Deirdre Flint performing, and the real feather in our cap was Bill Staines, who is really a national treasure. He's a singer-songwriter who's been performing really for 40 years all across the country. And he's been on Mountain Stage. He's been on Garrison Keillor's show. And he traveled all the way from New Hampshire to perform here at MCES for our staff and patients. So it's a wonderful thing that we're able to do this. Next week we're having 20 bagpipers and drummers performing in the courtyard at Twilight. It's going to be quite a scene here. And my heart is really full talking about it because I'm able to witness these events and see the impact on the patients and the staff. Really, everyone has their life enriched, I think, by arts and culture. And this is admittedly biased. This is coming from a theater major. I should say a recovering theater major. But really, I feel like we're all touched in some way when we're exposed to the arts, and we're all diminished in some way when we're not. And MCES is a wonderful place, and it offers excellent treatment, but the building is a little austere, and the focus here is on therapy and treatment, as it should be. But once a month, for an hour a month, there gets to be music and just art, and it's unfiltered and it's unfettered, and the patients and staff can talk to the artists afterwards and ask them questions and really feel like attention is being paid to them.
Right.
And I think that's so important, and I'm really privileged to be able to offer that here.
It's kind of interesting because a little while back I had, I don't know if you're familiar with Carrier Clinic, which is not too far from here, but it's a clinic for, you know, well, they do alcohol prevention and, you know, drug rehabilitation, along with mental health issues. And they have a woman who is a music instructor, and they have a woman who's an art instructor. And I had them both on at the same time. And they both, you know, felt the same way, that art and music helps quiet the patient and gets them into a relaxed mode, and they can, you know, even if they're not great artists, you know, and me, I can't draw a line with a straight line with a ruler, but it doesn't matter, you know, because it's helping them calm themselves down, you know. And music, they were saying, did the same thing, you know. And it didn't matter what kind of music. It could be hip hop, it could be, you know, ballet, or, you know, I mean, opera or whatever. And it was kind of interesting. And that's pretty much what you're saying. It's giving the staff and the patients a chance to listen to, well-known are, you know, fairly well-known artists. And, you know, I think that's kind of interesting, and I really do. And I hope you get your grants renewed for that, you know.
As do I. And if we don't, we'll just find some way to make it happen, because it has to happen. And, I don't have studies or empirical data to show it, but I've seen it, and I know it, and I feel it. And so it's just going to continue here no matter what.
And I know that someone sent me an email, and attached to that email was a short movie documentary, I can speak. And in it was someone I'm speaking to. You want to talk about that?
Sure. So that would be me.
Our town, right?
And yes, our town. So I had a funny idea last year about a way to bring our staff together. We have 250 people who work at MCES on all shifts, full-time and part-time and per diem and administration and nurses and psych techs and allied therapists and the whole bit. And I thought of this way to bring us together to do a show. And it was kind of an unorthodox team-building activity, and it took from start to finish probably about 6 or 7 months.
Wow,
but
really?
It was an investment. But I was struck with this idea, a line from the play Our Town is, we never have time to look at one another. And it just struck me as so applicable to our staff, that here we're running here and there, we've got a treatment team meeting to go to, the phone's ringing, we've got to write discharge instructions, the patient's family's calling, it's medication time at the window, and things are just always, always happening. And here we have all these people who work here for this common goal. Some have worked here for 30-plus years. Some have just started. And we never have time to look at one another either. So I contacted Samuel French, which is the licensing company that holds the rights to Our Town, and I told them what I wanted to do and that I wanted to put on this play. And they contacted the Thornton Wilder estate, Thornton Wilder being the playwright, deceased. And the Thornton Wilder estate was very moved by the idea, and they waived all rights and fees associated with producing the play for us, which I'm incredibly grateful for. And I cast the show with 23 staff members, all from all departments, from administration on down to psych tech. And we rehearsed for twice a week for 4 months in a very unused 600-seat theater on the grounds of Norristown State Hospital. It's a massive, beautiful theater that was built in the mid-60s. And back in the heyday of the state hospital system, really, thousands of patients gathered there for movie night, and they produced plays. But since the institutionalization, the theater is barely used for anything other than the occasional conference here and there. And I said, this has to be used for theater again. So we rehearsed the show together on our own time. Nurses would work 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. and then run over for a 7:30 rehearsal, stay till 10 o'clock at night on a volunteer basis. And the culmination was we performed the show twice in front of approximately 600 people. There was no admission charged. It was just a suggested donation. People donated whatever they wanted. We ended up with $3,500 for the MCES Patient Fund, which is an incredible boost for what we do here. And staff members got to feel good about themselves, and they got to feel connected to something larger. And many of the staff members had never been in a show before, ever. And it was an incredibly rewarding experience. And I'm in the process of planning the next show now, so we'll see what that's going to be.
Have you decided what it's going to be yet?
I'm tossing around a couple ideas. I'm trying to keep this close to the vest.
Okay, so, I won't press you. I won't press you. You don't have to say anything.
I will let you know, and I'd love to talk to you again at some point during the rehearsal process and maybe have one of the actors involved in the show talk about what it means to them and how it improves their outlook on themselves, their coworkers, their work, and life.
Sure, absolutely. I think that would be awesome.
Wonderful.
You know, so stay in touch then.
Absolutely.
What was I going to say? Yeah, I lost my thought now. You got me so excited about this upcoming event.
auditions are open.
Yeah, well, forget it. It's my wife tells me I've got a great radio face, you know, so. You had mentioned earlier about crisis intervention and a CIS instructor from Montgomery County.
Yes.
Was it Michelle Monzo?
Mm-hmm.
And now she was training, a two-day training for Amtrak. All right, would you explain to the residential people out here who don't have Amtrak what that is?
Sure. Amtrak is a national rail provider, and they have a force of approximately 500 police officers, really 400 of them in uniform. And Amtrak contacted MCES originally in 2011 about doing crisis intervention training for their police officers. So Michelle first engaged in training their officers, did a one-day training in 2011 and went to those different cities that I
right, you mentioned,
Washington,
right.
Philly, New York, and then to California. By the way, just a side note, Amtrak, they have 44 routes, and they cover their length of their track is 21,000 miles of track all across
wow.
the country. So they're a very, very big force in rail transportation, and like I said, they have a national police force. And Amtrak was so satisfied and pleased with the one-day training that Michelle offered in 2011, they teamed up with us again in 2014. And basically, I'll tell you a little bit about the training that she offered. There was basic crisis intervention, which covered verbal and nonverbal de-escalation techniques mm-hmm. for police officers,
right.
learning how to intervene and interact with individuals in crisis, active listening, limit setting. There was a role play component as well, a hearing voices simulation to give officers a little bit of exposure to what that's like. There was a overview of Asperger's and autism spectrum disorders, personality disorders. There was a peer support video that was shown as well. And another component of the program was also identifying anger and stress management in law enforcement, triggers and trigger responses, law enforcement stress, burnout, things that can really negatively impact and affect an officer's ability to be at the top of their game and effectively intervene in any situation
right.
that they might encounter,
right.
but especially with an individual who may be experiencing a crisis. So that was really the core of this two-day training, which Michelle just completed recently for Amtrak's police department.
That's pretty awesome. How did Michelle get to be this type of instructor?
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
I said, yeah, how did Michelle become this instructor? I mean,
she started out at MCS many years ago, worked in different capacities, in nursing administration, in the crisis department, in our outreach department, and she has a great knowledge of issues that confront law enforcement officers, especially relating to mental health. She was appointed our crisis intervention specialist instructor in 2002 and holds many certifications. She's a certified crisis intervention trainer through the Crisis Prevention Institute. She's a hostage negotiator. She's
okay.
a member of the CISM team. She's also a certified aging and adult protective service agent. And recently she had an honor bestowed on her by the Montgomery County DA for a role that she played in successfully talking down a suicidal individual from a third-story rooftop. So we're very proud to have her working here.
Yeah, absolutely.
She has a wonderful relationship with area law enforcement and is a real boon to the community.
Now, I was just curious, you know, because usually when you have someone like that's, you know, instructor-type person like that, usually they have a background, you know, either in law enforcement or law or, you know, so I was just curious, you know, and she evidently has quite a background and, you know, she should feel very privileged to have her on your staff, you know.
We we definitely do. She's an excellent asset, not only to us, but to the community at large.
I'm going to have to take a quick break.
Sure.
You're listening to Mental Health Matters, and our guest is Gabriel Nathan. He's a development specialist at the Montgomery County Emergency Services, which is in Norristown, PA. And it's a private, nonprofit crisis response center. And we've been talking about various things and programs and things that they put on. And we'll be back in just a few moments. So sit tight. We'll be back.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Hi, this is Ruth Ann Disatel, celebrant officiant with Celebration of a Lifetime. When people ask me why I joined the Chamber, it's because I want to get to know you and what you're all about. And I want you to get to know me and what I'm all about. And together, I'd like to celebrate what we can do for Hunterdon County.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Are you tired of the limitations of your small office shredder? Do you need to be compliant with federal regulations regarding the disposal of sensitive information? Are you concerned about identity theft? If so, then call AssureShred. AssureShred will provide your company customized on-site document destruction service that fulfills regulatory requirements and at the same time protects your organization from the consequences of the improper disposal of sensitive information. To obtain a free quote or to schedule an appointment, call AssureShred at 877-466-1566 today. That's 877-466-1566.
Welcome back to Mental Health Matters. I'm Larry Cartwright, your host. And we have with us Gabriel Nathan. And Gabriel's been on once before, and he's always an interesting person to speak to. He's a development specialist at the Montgomery County Emergency Services in Norristown, PA. And it's a private, nonprofit crisis response center. And we've been talking about a very bunch of things. But Gabriel, I'd like to ask you about, you sent me an email and said you partnered in September with SEPTA on suicide.
Yeah.
Could you first tell everybody what SEPTA is? Since we don't have SEPTA in this area where we are, and what you partnered with them about the suicide, so on and so forth.
Absolutely. So SEPTA is a commuter rail service, and they serve the Delaware Valley, Philadelphia, Bucks County, Montgomery, Delaware County, Chester County. They do have some lines that end in Delaware State and New Jersey. But they are a commuter rail service, and they've got around 400 or so miles of track. And on those tracks, unfortunately, every year, there are a number of deaths by rail. And according to Scott Sauer, which is SEPTA's Director of Safety and Risk Management, around half of those deaths on their railways are eventually ruled suicides. Hmm. And so that got us thinking here at MCES, what can we do? how can we be of service in this area? So MCS's crisis hotline, I think I mentioned towards the beginning of the program when I was talking about our services, our crisis hotline is a member of the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline.
Mm-hmm.
So calls from 610 area code 215-267-484, those calls get routed to MCS's crisis line. So we are that lifeline partner. We approached SEPTA officials, their law enforcement officials, their safety officials, about a plan to incorporate signs for the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, which is 1-800-273-TALK, to put those signs at certain hotspots where SEPTA notices larger numbers of rail deaths throughout the years. And SEPTA actually took it one step further. They decided that they were going to roll this initiative out system-wide. And we were very pleased with that. And on September 10th, which was World Suicide Prevention Day, SEPTA did announce that they were going to roll out the initiative system-wide all along their track at all their stations and their right-of-ways. And you can see them all throughout the Delaware Valley on the way to the city, signed for the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline with the saying, "With help comes hope." And there is hope out there. And, you know, I think sometimes there's the idea that the signs are there to reach people who are actively on the track and they've made the decision. And it's for something else as well. I think it's very important to destigmatize the word suicide and increase the awareness of resources that are out there to help. And every time you see that word, every time you see the number for the lifeline, it's increasing that awareness. So ordinary passersby see it and take notice of it. And it's just so important to be putting that out there in the public consciousness so that people know where to turn if they need help.
Exactly. And I think you said in your email to me that there was one police suicide in Montgomery County and two police suicides in Delaware County.
Yes.
And I can understand. I had someone on not too awful long ago. He was a police officer for about 6 years. And he then is heading a crisis program for police officers, first responders, firemen, EMTs, you know, et cetera. And, it's kind of hard to explain. Like a police officer, say, maybe not so much in our area here, but say in New York City or in Trenton or Patterson or Philadelphia, they see things.
Yes.
And that are not, obviously not pretty, obviously have effect on them. When they come home, it's not like they can talk to their wife and three kids about it.
Right.
So they hold it in, or they go to a bar and drink, and, you know, and it gets every day, then they go back out again, and the same thing happens, or something different happens, but it's just as bad or worse or whatever. And they can't, you know, they have no place to let it go, you know. And that's why, you know, these things like this are very important, you know, things that this gentleman does talking to him, because he can talk from experience. He was a cop.
Yes.
Now he went on for his doctorates and everything, and he's, you know, but still he was a cop, you know, and it wasn't like he was, you know, a part-time police officer in some little, you know, 30 resident area. He was in a big city. And, you know, so it's interesting to me. The other thing that you put in the email you sent me was that MCES hooked up with local middle schools and partnered to educate the students on suicide prevention.
Yes.
And you provided teachers suicide prevention toolkits.
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, it was Owen J. Roberts School District, and they're actually not even in Montgomery County, they're in Chester County. They approached us. It's an interesting thing. They received funds from a local foundation. Owen J. Roberts Middle School has what's called a youth and philanthropy club. So it's an after-school club where the children meet, and they have a faculty advisor, and they're learning about philanthropy. And so they applied for this grant and received a grant, and the children were polled, and they said, well, what do you want to spend money on? What do you think is a pressing issue? And the vast majority of the students said mental health and suicide prevention. And I think that's
shocking.
Really. It's very telling. It says that this is what's on their mind. This is something that's impacting them directly and daily. If not them, then someone they love or care about. And they reached out to us and said, you know, what can we do to spread knowledge and information about suicide prevention in our school? So our director of suicide prevention here at the hospital, his name is Tony Salvatore, he had put together a suicide prevention toolkit for several different populations. One was directed at emergency responders and police officers. One was directed at high school guidance counselors. And one is directed at family members. So Tony developed one for teachers, just overall general teachers and faculty members in a school. We brought in the students from the Owen J. Roberts Youth and Philanthropy Club to MCES. Tony gave a presentation about suicide prevention, and then the kits are actually in the process of being printed right now, printed and bound, and then the students are going to present those toolkits to their teachers. So essentially the students are going to be the suicide prevention emissaries and educators to their teachers.
That's totally awesome.
So it empowers them. They have the education and the knowledge to present this information to their teachers, and now the teachers have a pocket size. It's a little booklet that slips right into the pocket. It's we call it a quick and dirty suicide resource guide where teachers can feel comfortable intervening in that situation, knowing what to look for, what to do, how to refer, and to not be afraid, because they're really the front line.
Absolutely.
They're the ones who have the student contact.
That's what I was going to say. Right. Exactly. In today's workforce, the average parents are working, both husband and wife. And so the child spends more time basically with the teacher than with the parents. And it's just the way it is. And I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just saying that's the way it is.
That's the way that my children are. I have twins, and they're 3 years old, and they are already spending more time with their teachers than they are with me.
Exactly.
Sorry to say.
And it's true. I mean, when I had four kids and when I worked, there was times I was traveling all over the country. I'd leave on Sunday and wouldn't get back till Saturday, you know, and you know what I'm saying? So it's like, but what I was going to say was that when we teach classes and give presentations to schools and teachers and such, I tell them that they spend more time with the kids than the parents, and they're more apt to be the first to recognize something changing in the child. Whether it's you had the child 2 years ago and he was outgoing, happy, you know, into everything and knew answers to the questions and so on and so forth. And now you see him and he's sullen, he's alone, he doesn't talk to anybody. And, you know, there's something going on. You know, don't be afraid to ask, you know.
And that's the idea, too, is unfortunately there's still that idea that, oh, if I ask, then I'm implanting the idea in
right.
your head.
And that is totally wrong, exactly. Totally false, you know. And the other thing what I like about what you said here with the students and such is that in colleges, the second leading cause of death in college campuses is suicide. And when that college rep comes to the high schools and talks to the juniors and seniors, he's not saying that.
Right.
He's not saying, oh, well, the second leading cause of death in my school is suicide, you know. Mm-hmm. But it is. And unfortunately, it's reached the point where it's almost, you know, epidemic.
Yeah.
And I think that by talking to the younger students like you're doing there, I think that's awesome. Especially since they stepped forward and said, yeah, this is what we want to learn and do and yada, yada. Because that you don't find that often.
Now, their commitment, they are very serious. And I really applaud every single one of them and their faculty advisors for the steps they're taking in this area. It's really impressive. It really is.
It is. It's just I'm totally impressed, and believe me, sometimes it takes a lot to impress me, but and I'm not just saying that. You can check with my wife. But no, seriously, I think it's awesome because they can then talk to their friends, and the friends can talk to their friends, and who knows, they may save somebody, you know?
And these are eighth graders, and the hope is that they're going to carry this information and this knowledge into high school with them, where the risks are even greater.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're absolutely right. I know that, what was I going to say here? You had at one point a drive-out suicide thing, right?
Yeah.
A thing. Yeah, well, a program or something called drive-out suicide. Is that still in effect?
The drive-out suicide initiative was actually sponsored by the Pennsylvania Adult and Older Adult Suicide Prevention Coalition. I think I got that right.
Yes, you did. That's what's written here.
And they contacted us and said, hey, you know, we have this thing. We have these large window clings. We'd like you to be a part of this, again, to publicize 1-800-273-TALK.
Mm-hmm.
And so they gave us those clings, and we rotated them through 20 of our staff members. You know, a staff member would have it on their car for 2 weeks and then give it to another staff member. And we did that sort of down on the daisy chain. And this year, we did that on a smaller scale. We did still participate in Drive Out Suicide. I was a volunteer driver for about 2 months, I think it was. And so that was the extent of our involvement this year.
Well, I think that anything that we do to get the word out about suicide, about, you know, talking to people, don't be afraid to ask someone if you think that they're maybe considering it. You're not going to drive them, like we said, over the edge and to go do it. It may be just the point of you asking that they would open up and talk about it. So anything that we can do, I think, is awesome because there's too many young lives going to waste.
Absolutely, and that's the point that we made during the presentation to the students from O&J Roberts. It's be the kind of person that someone would want to open up to if they needed to.
Right.
Be open, be non-judgmental, be empathic and understanding. Just be an ear for people. Sometimes that's all that they need.
Right, exactly, exactly. You know, we have a couple minutes left. Is there anything that we haven't touched on that you'd like to speak about? Do you have any upcoming events or fundraisers or anything like that?
Not formally, but I will say, I'll throw the plug in there. As a development specialist, we are a nonprofit. We do depend on the generosity of others. We have a big purchase coming down the pike later this month. We've just purchased an ambulance to replace a 10-year-old unit with 150,000 miles on it that is just was down all the time for repairs. We were able to raise a significant portion of the funds, but we do have a shortfall. So if you would like to make a tax-deductible contribution to MCES, you may do so on our website, mces.org. You can call me, or you can email me. Any way you want to do it, the help would be greatly appreciated.
If they wanted to reach out to you, do you have a phone number that you would like to give?
Absolutely. It would be 610-279-6100, and my direct extension is 175. And I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to talk about any of the programs we talked about on the radio show today. Be happy to chat.
And that number again is 610-279-6100 and extension 175, correct?
You got it.
Okay. I don't know why I had 185 written down before, and you know,
different year, different office.
Yeah, it may have been, you know, because the lady I spoke to says, "Oh, that's not his extension." I says, "Oh, is he still there?" She says, "Oh, yeah, yeah."
We play musical extensions. Yeah.
But I just, you know, I can't thank you enough. In the closing minutes, I just want to say that your organization, Montgomery County Emergency Services, is just doing so much for the community and people in general. Suicide, art, shows for your clients, you know, CIT training, or it's just to me, it's just so rewarding to hear all that you do. And I really, really hope that in the future you continue. And Gabriel, I mean this sincerely, you will be coming back.
Well, I appreciate that, Larry, and it's a privilege to work at MCES, and it's a privilege to be on your show, so well, I'm very grateful for both.
Trust me, if you have something down the road and you haven't heard from me, you have my email, you know, reach out.
I'll give you a shout.
I would appreciate that. And again, like I said, I'm very serious. I'm going to have you back, okay? So you better have something else we can talk about, you know?
That's right. I'll be here.
Okay, very good. You've been listening to Mental Health Matters. I'm Larry Cartwright, your host. And we had on today Gabriel Nathan, who is the development specialist for Montgomery County Emergency Services in Norristown, PA. And we've been talking about all the things they do, and it's just a great organization. And real quickly, the number is 610-279-6100, extension 175. Gabriel, thank you again. I do appreciate it.
My pleasure, Larry. Thank you.
We'll be back again next week, so stay tuned. And remember, folks, mental health really does matter.
USA Headline News. I'm Kelly Sloan. Republican Senator Marco Rubio of Florida is officially running for president. AP correspondent Tony Winton has more.
Speaking on a conference call with donors, Florida's junior senator says he is uniquely qualified to make the case that the Republican Party can best defend the American dream. Rubio took on leading Democrat Hillary Clinton, saying the 2016 presidential race should be about the future, not the past. Rubio faces tough challenges getting the GOP nomination, not the least of which is from fellow Floridian Jeb Bush, who is also expected to make a White House run. Bush was also one of Rubio's political mentors. Tony Winton, Miami.
And Hillary Clinton announced her campaign yesterday for the Democratic nomination.
I'm getting ready to do something, too. I'm running for president.
The former Secretary of State made the announcement yesterday on video. This is USA Headline News.
Would you wait several days for your cell phone to fully charge? Would you wait several days to feel the full effect of relief from your nasal congestion? Flonase Allergy Relief Nasal Spray could take that long. But if you're congested now and you want powerful relief now, use Afrin No Drip. Afrin starts working in seconds and keeps working for 12 hours. So why wait several days to feel the full effect?
When
you can start to get relief in seconds with Afrin. Afrin, powerful congestion relief without the wait. Use as directed.
This is a special broadcast. At 4:10 p.m. today, I died. And yet here I am. Why? I am a messenger of God.
This Friday.
This is the beginning.
A star fell from heaven. It changed us and gave us a new destiny to stop the devil himself.
Wait, you mean like the devil?
The end will begin.
We're the angels of the apocalypse.
The Messengers, series premiere Friday on the CW.
A community college in Goldsboro, North Carolina, is on lockdown.
There have been shots fired on the campus of Wayne Community College. There has been one fatality, and there's one shooter.
That was Kim Best, Goldsboro Director of Public Information. Authorities are searching for the gunman, who has been identified as Kenneth Stancil. The victim was college employee Ron Lane. Gas prices continue to drop. The nationwide average is $2.45 a gallon, and analysts expect the trend to continue.
If crude oil prices don't buoy up a bit more, then we may see even a few more pennies decline at the pump.
That was Trilby Lundberg from the Lundberg Survey. She also says retailers and refiners are cutting into their profit margins to keep gas prices low. The Kremlin says Russia has lifted its ban on the delivery of a sophisticated air defense missile system to Iran. Russia signed the $800 million contract in 2007, but later suspended the delivery because of strong objections from the United States and Israel. This is USA Headline News.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, U.S. Tax Shield can help you take back control. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Our team of tax attorneys can stop collections and get you protected. U.S. Tax Shield offers a price protection guaranteed quote to get you protected today. U.S. Tax Shield is A-plus rated with the BBB, so call